Monday and Tuesday, we look to have between 3 to 4 inches rainfall with high winds as well. So please stay in tune with Nixel. We'll be updating the status of that so people are aware of the weather conditions. We'll also be posting updates on the Borough Facebook page as well as the wrangell.com website. To subscribe for Nixel, please go to our website, go to How Do I. Under How Do I, you'll be prompted to Nixel registration. Click on that, input your phone number, email address, and you'll get the Nixel updates. Our goal as a borough is to go from 10% to 75% of the borough within the next few months, which, you know, we only have 280 subscribers to date. So we're really looking to branch upon that, as well as an update of our emergency operations plan. Going into this disaster, we were really lucky to have really competent individuals at the helm, and I'm really thankful for Dee Dee and Tim's leadership. We didn't have a really good put together emergency operation plan, so we're going to be working with the state of Alaska to update that based off of some of the updates that have occurred with the Sitka and Haines emergency operations plan with the context of the slide. And we want to make sure that the community is super involved in that process. So be on the lookout. It's in the works, and we'll also be updating our hazard mitigation plan. In terms of monitoring and response to this landslide, there's been a lot of questions about what we're doing to enhance predictability and what the data is telling us. I'll kick it to the folks at DGGS to elaborate a bit more on the data and what it's saying to us. I think generally the analysis is still being developed in terms of causation. A DOT will be sending a drone in a box as well as a weather station in the coming weeks. And so that'll really enhance our ability to monitor the existing slide as well as other concerning areas across the borough. The 3 mile site is on top of mind for us, so I know we got a lot of questions about that. There was some pictures posted on Facebook from, you know, a while back ago. The initial slide had occurred prior to 2021. You can confirm that as Google Earth's imagery has not been updated since 2021, so you can still see that defined slide. Now, there's been concern that residual amounts of debris are falling, and the water running downstream of that slide has kind of built up some debris at the road there, the logging road. So we're going to continue to monitor that, and we have LIDAR information. We have LIDAR of the entire borough, and perhaps somebody from DGGS can explain what LIDAR does for us and kind of comment on how that'll be analyzed in the weeks and months to come. That's about it on the borough response. We're going to have a lot of time for questions at the end. We got about an hour blocked off for agency updates as well as kind of a Q&A that I'll probably start prompting after everybody's given an update. But that's it for right now. Shannon, do you want to start us off with DOT?
Yes, absolutely. So as you mentioned, Mason, we were able to install a 36-inch culvert yesterday. This is actually the first of several culverts that we'll be installing. Once the storms have passed through, we will go ahead and install an additional 36-inch and then a 72-inch that we got from the U.S. Forest Service. So thank you so much to the U.S. Forest Service for that. So we'll be putting these in, and that will really help us convey water and moisture from, you know, from the uphill side to the downhill side without that moisture damaging the road. So with that, that will take a number of extra days. There'll be about 4 days once the thank you, Sam. Once the storms have passed, and then we'll start on the concrete installation. So this will require that we dig out a half width of the road and then place that concrete on top. The dig out will take at least 2 days, and the concrete pour will take, in terms of curing, it'll take an additional 3 to 4 days. So we'll do the one half of the road, and then we'll switch to the other half. So all in all, with that, and then also rebuilding the embankment on the southern side, it will take at least 2.5 to 3 weeks to complete the work. As long as weather cooperates, it could add some time on. So for apologies for that, but we are moving as deliberately and as quickly as we can. And then I wanted to mention the two weather stations and the drone in the box. We're getting the permitting for the two weather stations and ensuring that we have power so that these can run continuously. That really gives us that data to help the city and borough make decisions along with the state. So, and then also the drone in the box is coming. And the nice thing about the specific one that we chose is, and we have it now in Juneau. So it will be installed again once we have a site determined and permits in place and power. But that will enable us not just to monitor the slide area at mile 11, but will also allow us to go up and down the highway in total. So some improvements there. And with that, I will turn it back to you, Mason.
I think we'll kick it over to our folks at DNR. Lorraine, do you want to head that up and maybe a little bit of elaboration from DGGS on what they're doing with the data that they've collected from the 11-mile site, some of the data they've collected from the 3-mile site, and what we can expect in the coming weeks and months in terms of an analysis and causation.
And explain what LIDAR is for the community.
Thanks, Mason. I'm going to let Mort Larson with the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys within the Alaska Department of Natural Resources speak, because he's the expert here, and we certainly want to hear directly from the scientists.
Yeah, thanks, Lorraine. Hi, everybody. Just to give you a quick update what DGGS is up to as we're speaking, and then I'll elaborate a little more on the LIDAR. So the geologists and our scientists that were out in the field, they're back in the office, and we're compiling their data and their information that they gathered while they're out there. As everybody knows, that there was some additional LIDAR flowing for those specific locations. The LIDAR has been collected, and right now we're in the process of finishing processing that data and analyzing that. We've got staff right now working on that analytical data, and we're going to be getting together looking at that data. How that data is going to be released, we plan on releasing that as a preliminary interpretive report. And what that entails is it's just a preliminary interpretive report about the analytical data. And then the actual data is going to be a raw data file. And what that is that's the LIDAR derived elevation data. So those two pieces will be released because they speak volumes to each other on that perspective. And what we're doing, just kind of give you guys a perspective on that LIDAR data, is being since we had LIDAR that was collected this summer, is that we're able to look at just the difference between the two different LIDAR data sets. So we'll look at that, analyze that, and get an idea, but we want to make sure that we're doing it in a format in a way that we get the data correct and that we get this to these decision makers. And we understand the urgency on that, and we're working around the clock on getting that. We've got continued requests from the media on questions and responding to them with interviews and questions about landslides in general and just general information. So we're supporting that piece and that on responding to the media. And as Mason alluded to, we're in communication right now with that, the incident and the debris that they're seeing there at milepost 3 up there above, I think it's the trailer parks along that, transmission corridor. They've been providing updated, drone imagery and information about people going up there and seeing that. And when it's nice because we have imagery and photos that we took when we were out in the field to do a comparison. So we know that that's a hot item that we've been in communication with them. So we're continuing that communication to see where we can provide information or resources for them on making decisions on that. So we'll continue that. And then we also, amidst all this, we published, and I do believe you guys posted that on your guys' Facebook, but we did a fact sheet about landslide hazards in Alaska, just general landslide information and, you know, information, what causes landslide warnings, just very informational information that we can provide to the public, and where do landslides occur, you know, what to do during a landslide, maybe after a landslide, and additional resources. So this is information that we're providing to the public just to educate them in general about the landslides. And then we're also in the midst of publishing some other pamphlets about landslide information and details on that. So that's in the works right now. So that all in a nutshell is what we've got going on at DGGS. For the LIDAR perspective, an educational piece on that is it's a device that gives us information that we're able to deploy out there on a fixed wing, or like we did for down in Wrangell, a helicopter. And what this does is it gives us information that bounces back to the surface and comes back, and it gives us this data that we're able to take as a tool. And LIDAR has been a game changer for scientists, and that's why it's very important to get this data. And it's one of the first things we ask, do we have LIDAR for these specific areas once an incident happens like this? So what we're able to do with that LIDAR data is we can do numerous things. We can do modeling. We can look at, we can do slope analysis. We can look at slope degrees. But one of the things that a lot of us like to do is we can take the data, what we call a digital terrain model, digital surface model, and create what we call a hill shade. And what that hill shade does is it gives us a perspective of the bare earth. Down here in the southeast, everything's vegetated, but we're able to pull away that vegetation and see what's in on the surface. And what that does is that helps us really kind of initiate any areas of warning that we need to look at or be able to target certain things. So there's multiple uses that we use for the LIDAR, but I know people hear LIDAR, but it's definitely a tool that helps us at least navigate to where we need to go with future investigations and development. So that's all I got for DGGS.
And Morten, I might prompt you for a few other questions. In terms of early warning signs, what can folks pay attention to in their surroundings to give them a better understanding of the potential for a slide?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, Mason. And I think in order to reduce risk is to, one, couple things is to educate yourself about landslides. Where do landslides typically occur? You know, what are the situations? What are the triggering things and so forth? The other thing is like warning signs. You know, do you see stuff within your property that you see structural damage within your retaining wall or within your driveway? Do you see a tree that's tipping over that you haven't seen before? Are you seeing debris in an area that you haven't seen before? Especially, you know, areas that are prone for high risk, you know, steep slopes or areas within drainages, is just to keep a keen eye on that. So helping notifying yourself and educate yourself on that, and for us to relay that information is definitely a way you can reduce your risk on that.
Great. I understand that Mitch McDonald just joined. He was here on the ground. Travis is also with him, I believe. Mitch and Travis, do you have any updates at all you'd like to share?
Yeah, so this is Travis Eckhoff with the Alaska Department of Transportation. I apologize, I'm kind of en route traveling to another site, but I'm glad to be able to join you all. So we are still diligently working on getting those weather stations installed at the site. I think as Shannon mentioned, we're going to install one up at the ridge, one down at the road, and that'll just give us a better picture and understanding of how precipitation and wind and snow are affecting that slope in that area. We're also working to get that drone box deployed as soon as possible, and that'll allow us to do continuous flights from Juneau and continue to collect data so that we can understand the slope stability conditions there as weather changes.
Great. Mitch, did you have anything to add from what Mort might have commented on?
No, nothing to add.
Okay, great. I want to kind of pull together a theme of kind of what we discussed in terms of oversight and monitoring capabilities. Our goal and our objective as a borough is to be able to provide the best oversight and enhance predictability to the greatest degree. But I think we have to be real with constituents and say there's only so much we can do to predict these types of things. It's a science to be able to go analyze and investigate certain liabilities. But as we all know, this wasn't an area that we would have probably put in our top 10. So I would liken it much to tornadoes in the Midwest, right? There's very little warnings, signs that we can do. So we want to be able to equip folks with the best information available to make good personal decisions. And I think that's our goal throughout this whole process, and definitely want to be as transparent as possible with folks on the data that we're collecting. And it's going to take, you know, weeks to develop that. And, you know, I'd like to work with DGGS to kind of develop an area of concern overall, so we can kind of chart that out moving forward. There's concern about whether we will be condemning the properties within the slide. There's a state statute that Lorraine had pointed out yesterday for potential land swaps for those folks directly impacted by the slide. So we'll be investigating that further. So a lot of different things happening. I want to kick it over to the State of Alaska Emergency Operations Center folks and IA, individual assistance. There's a lot of questions around affected damages. What does that mean? There's been a strict interpretation of unless you're riding the course of the slide, we're not getting anything, or a more liberal interpretation that they could actually get help if they were not in the immediate scope of the slide. So I'll kind of turn it over to Lenita and Mike to kind of discuss that. Mike, we'll start with you, and then I'll kick it over to Lenita.
Sure. Thanks, Mason. So I'll give you a broad update of kind of where we're at with the program and what the program typically covers, just to get everybody on the same, you know, base level understanding. And then I can dive into some of the more unique things about this disaster. So we have 12 individual assistance applicants so far within Wrangell, and then we have about 16 total. And so we're not seeing a huge flood of applicants come in, which is somewhat typical for these types of events. As you all know, the damages can be kind of one area instead of just, you know, a flood that gets everybody type thing. Our individual assistance program has three different kind of arms to it. There's the housing assistance, which is basically to help repair disaster damaged homes. That has a maximum grant of $21,250. We also have our other needs assistance program, which covers kind of a wider range of things. Typically, we're looking at private property damages, like your household goods that may have been damaged or your transportation that was damaged, as well as things like moving or storage expenses. If you have to move some of your household goods out of your home and put them in storage for a little bit while you're figuring stuff out, as well as covering funeral, medical, and dental expenses as a result of the disaster. And that also has a max grant of $21,250. Lastly, we have our temporary housing assistance, which is essentially rental assistance. If your home is uninhabitable because of the disaster, then what we can do is we can help pay kind of a monthly stipend for someone to live outside of their primary residence until they can either repair their primary residence or move someplace else. And that doesn't have a max grant that is capped monetarily, that's capped length time or time and length. So if you're a homeowner, you have 18 months of eligibility. And if you are a home renter, you have 3 months of eligibility. And so, you know, the first thing I'll say is if you think there's any damages that you have that might be eligible, or if you're affected by the landslide in any way, especially your property, we would rather you apply to our program just to be safe. And then we can walk you through with our caseworkers and see if there's anything that might pop up that's eligible that we didn't see when we took our, you know, initial first take at the situation, right? And so you can apply to our program by going online at ready.alaska.gov, or you can also apply over the phone by calling our disaster assistance hotline at 1-844-445-7131. So the landslide, the main landslide path, obviously those homes are gone. And there's homes that are right very near that landslide path that essentially didn't have any damages to them. If a home doesn't have any damage to it and it has all utilities that it had before the disaster, then it would take something like a local government condemnation for us to be able to use the temporary housing program for some of those folks, which is an extreme thing that local governments very often use. We don't see it very often. And so that is just a general kind of broad overview of how that might play into some of our eligibility questions. And then secondly, and not that it wouldn't be expected, but you know, we're working with all the victims' families to get whatever assistance we can to them, even if it's something as small and simple as trying to get them some funeral assistance to help pay for funeral costs. Our people, we want to help whoever we can that's affected by the disaster. And the first step in doing that is just applying to our program so we can get to know each individual situation and see what we might be able to help with.
Great. Thanks, Mike. And just a reminder that individual assistance is open till January 27th, 2024. So you have some time, but definitely I'm hearing that definitely apply if you feel like you've been affected in any way or you have damages to know. Lindy, did you have anything to maybe fill in on that? No, good for now. Okay. And individual assistance separate from public assistance, which we've ventured into that process. Public assistance starts with the state declaration, which we did swiftly the next morning after the landslide. And that's been declared by the governor, and we've been working through that process. There's what we call a preliminary damage assessment that will be conducted starting Monday in conjunction with FEMA. And from that information and assessment, they'll give us the green light that this is now declared a federal disaster, or they'll say it's not big enough. I think the initial input that I've garnered is that because we're grouped with regional disasters on POW, that there's probably more of a chance that we escalate to the FEMA level. And there's a couple benefits of that. FEMA offers a lot of hazard mitigation funding post-disaster that the state addresses differently. They do still offer mitigation funding. It's a bit more competitive, but it'll give us several different buckets to address future liabilities. And so we're looking to get confirmation of the federal declaration after the PDA is conducted. It'll be a week long, or if not more. I know that the federal disaster has to be declared within 30 days of the initial disaster, the slide in this case, which puts us right around December 20th. So in terms of individual assistance and the public assistance, there's kind of some vague questions I've gotten for folks that operate an Airbnb. And they've taken people into their homes, it's impacted their business. What realm would that qualify under, Mike?
So I'll just say one quick thing, yeah. Mason, before I answer your question there. That December 20th deadline that you had mentioned, that's the deadline for the state to get our official request for federal assistance in. Okay. From there, there really is no official deadline for the federal government to get back to us. But, you know, I think it's safe to say within a month or two, we'll hear back from them on what their decision is. So I just want to make sure that was put out there. And then can you please remind me of your question one more time?
Yeah, absolutely. For folks that are housing evacuees from 11 Mile site and beyond, many of them operate Airbnbs. It's impacted their business. You know, are they sending those bills to the individual? Are they sending them to the city? How do we treat that? Should that be in the individual assistance realm or the public assistance realm?
That's a great question. And it's kind of a two-part answer, I think. One, if someone's home was uninhabitable, right, which is basically if it was damaged by the disaster or they don't have their utilities back that they had before the disaster, then I would say that it would be best for the Airbnb to bill them directly, because that would be eligible for our temporary housing assistance. And we could help pick up some of those bills from the individuals. On the flip side, on the folks that own things like Airbnbs, that might be eligible for SBA assistance, Small Business Administration. They're kind of a part of the FEMA, you know, federal government getting involved package. And so the Small Business Administration offers, you know, longer term, lower interest disaster recovery loans that can reach up into like 200,000 plus range if needed. And they can kind of cover a lot more stuff than what most government assistance programs can, because they're designed for things like for-profit businesses or Airbnbs. And so part of the joint preliminary damage assessment that will be happening next week includes folks from the SBA coming to look at homes and also at businesses. And so if you know any business to include Airbnbs that were affected, specifically if they had damages, like physical damages, that would be really great information to get into the hands of the joint PDA team when they come around to wrangle next week.
Great. Thanks, Mike. Are there any other updates from the agency side that anybody wants to provide? If not, I'll kind of start going through some of the questions we've received and kick it to each respective agency.
Yeah, Mason, this is Jeremy Zedek, the DHS and EMPIO. I'd add on to Mike's comments that those SBA programs are loans that are become available if there's that SBA declaration, and they do have to be repaid. It's not like a grant income in the form of a grant. Sometimes those loans can, most of the time when we have an SBA declaration, those loans can be extended to homeowners as well. And they give very low interest loans that can pay for things that are outside of the kind of scope of what our state programs can pay for, or their needs that aren't being met by some other program, nonprofit. And to go a little bit farther on the need to apply, you know, if we don't know that people have damages, we can't really do anything to try to help them. And that's one of the purposes of applying for individual assistance. We work with the Alaska Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster, aka VOAD. And they've been very involved in the response effort. Folks like the American Red Cross of Alaska and Salvation Army and others are involved in that AK VOAD. And their involvement can go on for many years to try to address some of the needs of people that are lingering from the disaster event. So if we know that people have needs, we can work with some of these nonprofit charitable partners to try to find some resources. But if we don't know, there's nothing we can do to help those folks. So really encourage that people apply, do it before the deadline. I think that's January 23rd, Mike, is that correct? It's there in January, you still have time to apply. And 21st. You still have time to apply. It's an easy process. Get into our system. If there's some damage that occurs later that you identify, or some expense, critical need, you can always amend your application, but it becomes very difficult for us to start the applications after the deadline.
And again, that deadline was January 27th, 2024.
And for folks that want to come down to City Hall, we have these fact sheets that kind of comment on the individual assistance available, how you apply. So we'll have printed copies here. We'll also post it again on all our mediums out there. I'm going to start by going through some of the questions that we received. The mayor's garnered a pretty good list of questions. So I'm going to start this one off. DOT will close the road at 11 Mile today, Saturday, due to rain and high winds. We understand this closure is for our safety. Will closures under similar conditions continue after the road is repaired? Under what conditions, number of rainfall inches or mile per hour winds, will mandate a closure? And who will make the closure call, the city or the DOT? Will emergency vehicles be allowed to pass? So I can kind of start, and then I'll kind of kick it over to Shannon. DOT's in operation of the right-of-way, that's their jurisdiction, so they will be making the call. And emergency vehicles will definitely be allowed to pass. That's why we were rushing so quickly to get access and that debris cleared. So in the case of an emergency, that we were prepared to respond and can respond. I know that there's another weather front moving in on Monday and Tuesday. Shannon, can you kind of help the listening public understand the determination that you guys make when there's a road closure?
Yeah, and especially right now when we have people that are working right in the on milepost 11 where there was landslides. So we're trying to, you know, give them an abundance of caution for their safety. But we are really constructing elements that will help stabilize the area. We, you know, like those, the rock slopes and things like that. And then once we get the culverts in, we'll be in better shape. And part of it is, you know, obviously predicting landslides is very difficult, but we can get additional data, which is why we're bringing in those two weather stations and the drone in a box, because we really want to have that data to be able to provide decision makers, you know, information so that they can make take appropriate actions. So that would be obviously, you know, DOT and the city and DGGS working together to determine if there was a reason to close the road.
Great. Thanks, Shannon. And just as a reminder, Sunday will be a reevaluation period for us. We'll have to see what this rainfall affects out there in the 11 mile side. So we'll come out with an update on updated permitted times for people to pass through. And we'll do the same thing for Monday and Tuesday. So we're sorry that we can't provide, you know, concrete timelines for folks, but know that when we get that information, we'll push it out as fast as we can. The next question, we understand a monitoring system will be installed at 11 mile. How will it work? How much warning will it give residents? How do we get this monitoring information? And what method will be used to tell us to flee the area? Well, where will it be housed and who will monitor this system? So again, I'll try to kind of answer this a bit, and DGES can kind of chime in as well as DOT. We are looking at a comprehensive approach to monitoring and increasing our oversight capacity. I think it's fair to say we'll never be able to exactly predict these events. We're not going to stop them from happening. And an early warning sign, the best early warning signs we can come up with are you and observing your surroundings. If there's water flowing where it typically is not, or vice versa, there's no more water flowing where it typically is. Those kind of things are really helpful. But in terms of people having a, you know, alarm in their house that's, you know, linked to a sensor on the hillside, I don't think that's practical. It's probably not, you know, even if that alarm went off, these things happen in a matter of seconds. And that's not to provoke any kind of fear in residents. That's just a fact of these kind of disasters and characteristics of it. So I think the weather station, some additional soil monitoring, the drone gives us the tools to analyze each of these liabilities and give people the best information moving forward. Does anybody want to kind of poke holes in what I said or provide an additional update?
Yeah, Mason, I'll just chime in just a little bit on that, and I'll let DOT chime in since they're going to be installing the weather station. But I think it really amplifies the importance of the distribution of more weather stations, especially in Southeast, because we know that there are microclimates down here where specific areas will get more rain. So to have that tool right there in hand helps with decision makers to be able to see when these big systems come in. Yeah, we can look at it on a broad spectrum system when these systems come in, but areas that get really honed in on these intense short rain periods is definitely one of those tools that we need on making this very effective. On the early warning systems, those things are very expensive to install. There's a lot that goes into each one of the sites. As a state, we don't get involved with those, but we do whatever we can to provide data to make those systems effective to a certain degree. And those that comes in with these weather stations and deploying more of those. So I'll let DOT chime in on that perspective on what they're going to be doing with that weather station. And we'll be working directly with them on that too.
Sure. Thanks, Mort. This is Travis Eckhoff again with the Alaska Department of Transportation. And we're using that information that we're gathering from the drones and the weather station to help us paint the bigger picture of what's going on the slope. And we're really kind of approaching this problem the same as we would an avalanche path, right? So we know with avalanches, as you see differing weather conditions coming in, different storms, more snow, your hazards are really changing with each one of those events, right? Same with landslides. The more rain you see, the more intense rain you see, you're going to have increased hazards at certain times. When you have nice dry weather, that hazard's going to decrease. And so we're going to use the tools that we're installing out there to help us understand, you know, what are the changes in hazards at the site? You know, what increased awareness do we need to have? Do we need to look at road closures, or do we just need to look and say to the community, hey, just be a storm coming up? And so that's really our goal with those tools.
Great. Thanks, guys. And I kind of think it speaks to one of the next questions. Are there thresholds on rain accumulations, runoff amounts, mile per hour steady winds, or wind gusts we should be aware of or monitor? I think people want probably a concrete, you know, if we get 4 inches of rain, this is going to happen. But I don't think we can exactly comment on that. I think there's a lot of different variables that are attributable to a landslide occurring. Do you guys have any comments on that at all?
Yeah, so that's the great response there. You know, there are a lot of variables that go into it, and those thresholds are very difficult to define. It's going to change by site, you know, within your community itself, and then also based on all the things we've been talking about, weather, you know, previous rain, previous snowpacks, and so it's very hard to define those. The Sitka Science Sound Center has done some great work in developing a system for their community. And I would just encourage folks to reach out and to look at the products that they've developed, and that'll kind of help folks understand, you know, what level of thresholds might be out there.
That's great. Yeah. And we will be working with the city manager in Sitka and Haynes to, as we develop this approach for a new EOP hazard mitigation plan, and kind of a comprehensive oversight process. So rest assured, we'll be working with those that have experienced similar events and try to develop the best product available. While it comes to mind, I want to provide a brief update on the dam and our ability to reinforce our dam. There's been a lot of concern about, you know, 100-year storm at 6 inches of rain. There could be potential failures in the dam. We are working with the governor's office, and we have received word that we're working on getting some money in the capital budget here on December 15th. So that's really exciting. That'll be, allow us the opportunity to reinforce those dams so that there's not a worry. So, you know, just keep in tune with that. We'll be providing an update in the next assembly meeting on Tuesday, whether that makes it in the capital budget. And if it doesn't, this is our process moving forward to address that potential liability. The next question, the bluffs at 8 Mile are dangerous. As we drive past them, we pray to hold our breath, speed, and drive on the wrong side, traveling the curves into town. This is true. I think we all do that. I can speak for myself. Will you fence in or secure the boulders from crashing onto the highway? I know I talked to Shannon, I think it was, maybe it was Commissioner Anderson, about DOT maybe just actually be tacking in, driving in pins into the rock faces. That might be a first step, but maybe you guys can comment on that project and the timeline thereof.
I think that was Commissioner Anderson you were talking to. So I was going to ask if Mitch could jump in on this as well.
Yeah, that is an area that we have been aware of. It's in our unstable slope management program. We did nominate that for a project, and funds were awarded. We developed plans to install rock bolts, do some intensive scaling for parts of that slope. The larger blocks that occur around 8 Mile towards the end of that are beyond the scope of the funding that we received from the project, basically. So we remain aware of that. We're doing what we can to mitigate that slope with the funding that we get from the state for the slope management program.
Great. Thanks, Mitch. Kind of next question, will hand fashioned devices give homeowners living below hillsides some early warning, landslides, a yardstick half buried in soil positioned at true 90 degrees, or rocks piled up to detect any soil movement, or monitoring the clarity of a stream? Could these give any early warning to families? What else can we do or observe?
And Mason, they also asked about taking us pictures, successive photos of changes they observe. Will that benefit anyone?
I'll kind of kick it to Morton team to
answer that. Yeah, I'll take that question. And that's great that people are observant right from the get-go from this, to be able to be proactive on this and be able to put these indications and these signs within their area to have an idea if slopes are moving, and to document that's huge, because if you see any kind of slope movement on that, that's when you need to be contacting folks, your local emergency, or even reaching out to state that can provide some information, because those are indications of potential slope movement and unstable slopes, indicating on, you know, if you're looking at potential trees that you haven't seen before falling down in specific areas, and just like I think the question alluded to, sediment in areas that you haven't seen before, because again, we live in an area that's heavily vegetated, and that vegetation covers a lot of things that we don't see, and all of a sudden we see these warning signs that we want to keep an eye on. So being proactive on that is definitely a step moving forward, and it reduces the risk on that, and being very vocal on that, and having that communication factor out there.
Hey, Mason, you're muted, sir.
Sorry, it was going to get me one of these times. Next question, kind of for DOT. Will the repaired road at 11 Mile have a guardrail on the downside? I know there's a pretty steep slope, and they're repairing that shoulder. Will you install a barrier for future landslides or avalanches on the uphill side? So maybe just a comment there. I don't know if there's any plans for a guardrail, but you might know, Travis or Shannon.
We don't have information on that yet, as far as I know, unless Mitch or Travis do. I don't know if there was a guardrail there before, but if standards require one, we will put one in.
Okay, that's great.
If I could just add to that, part of what happened during the landslide is that it really eroded that 6-foot shoulder that we had in the past. So it looks a lot steeper than it did in the past, I think, which is what people are observing. But we will rebuild that shoulder.
Great.
We just got a little bit more information on that. It says we are replacing the ground downhill of the road, so a guardrail will not be required.
Great. Next thing is Nixle the city's early warning system and thoughts to installing a siren system? How do we sign up for Nixle? Navigate to the wrangle.com webpage, go to How Do I, and then click on Nixle registration. That's how you can sign up, and the easiest. We also have QR codes scattered around every document we're printing off, whether it's agenda statements for the borough assembly meetings or any borough issued documentation. I have a little QR code up in the header, so I'm just trying to make it easy for folks to join. It is our early warning system, as I said. In terms of the sirens, I don't know that sirens will be really extremely helpful in the context of a landslide. They are often in tsunamis. I think geographically, we're a lower hazard, just given we're so inland. Perhaps anybody, you know, some of the experts on the panel have a different perspective on that, but it's something to look into, at least for tsunami potential.
And along with that question, encourage the community to have battery-powered radio or radios available, because we will be broadcasting any alerts or information on our local radio station, KSTK.
Great. I'm going to keep on going. Are we okay for air medical evacuations at the airport if electrical lines are blown down again and we can't run our generators? So there's been a project ongoing in conjunction with the DOT. We have purchased a CAT generator out there to run the airport lights when a medevac's needed and our power is out. I know that the configuration of that generator hasn't been done yet. You know, Shannon or anybody from DOT, can you kind of give us some semblance of a timeline for that project? We did run into that scenario in the windstorm in 2021.
I don't have a lot of detail on that, but we are going to keep working with the city on that, and we'll provide you with an update when we know more.
Okay. This is kind of aimed at DGGS. When will the geologist landslide assessment reports be released to the public? I don't know how far along to the assessment of the data. And I know that there's a lot of analysis that still has to be done. That's probably an ongoing moving target for you folks. But what does that look like? What was produced post Haynes slide and Sitka slide? And what can residents expect for material to look at?
Yeah, so each one of those cases that you mentioned, Mason, for Sitka and Haynes, they all had their own element. So when data was delivered wasn't on the same schedule as each one of them, right? Each one of them is case by case. And so, you know, in regards to this Wrangle stuff. So right now with the preliminary stuff that we're working on, that is, we know, is a very critical piece that we're wanting to get into the hands of folks. And, you know, as I mentioned before, we're working deliberately on that, doing our analysis on the LIDAR between the stuff that was collected in the summer and the recent stuff. So that'll be the first thing that we end up doing on that. As far as investigating, you know, what caused the landslide and so forth, that is still in discussion. And there's going to be a lot of information and data diving into that for us to really kind of map that out of where we're going to be going with that. And that's going to take a lot of pieces with working with our looking at our existing LIDAR, previous LIDAR, looking at historical geological maps and getting that sense on that and seeing what other resources we have out there, be it federal or state. So that is, put a timeline on that. That's a difficult one to say at this point. But the first step is this preliminary stuff that we want to get out to folks.
Great. And we'll be staying in touch with DGGS and provide updates to our residents about reports that are issued and when those might be available. Yep. I think developing an area of concern might be a first step. I was talking to the assessors this morning over coffee about valuations for those properties. And so we'll have a really, really comprehensive approach in tackling the 11-mile slide as well as other liabilities. Just want to make it, you know, a lot of opportunity for community input along the way. It's not something that we're going to have a new plan in a couple of weeks and that's it. This is likely going to be a weeks, a months, a years thing that we keep on refining over time. That's about all the questions I have. If anybody else has any questions, I know Kate is our economic development director, is putting this all together for us. Is there any Facebook comments? I don't have the Facebook live stream up on my screen, but if there's any other questions, that would be great to hear them now.
And while we're waiting for those questions from the public, the Southside residents south of the landslide were virtually cut off from the main town. Their only avenue to get to town was by water. And we had some difficulty with docking sites and piers and so forth to accommodate the movement of people and materials coming in to support those residents. My question is there any assistance from state or federal entities that could help us either beef up our docking capabilities on the south end of the island so those people aren't stranded, or build a road that loops south side back into the north side?
I can take that one. The programs that you're, or the, what you're kind of talking about is hazard mitigation is what it sounds like. Our public assistance program, the public infrastructure side, and then the individual assistance program. Those are both kind of designed to get things back to pre-disaster condition. That's kind of the main thing that you focus on in disaster recovery, especially for public infrastructure to start with. There's some kind of bells and whistles that come with some of the different, you know, FEMA and state programs where maybe we can help improve something a little bit or whatnot, but it's involved. There's usually a lot more of the hazard mitigation dollars available and expertise available. And if you're talking about maybe additions or bettering docks that exist now or something like that, that's all hazard mitigation. And as Jeremy, you know, included last time, it is, those are longer timetables we're talking about to get stuff done. They're good programs, and it would be something that I encourage you to look into.
That program, because
you have to reset that again. I was on mute.
With communications, we had difficulty communicating with residents in the south side. We had to our central council, Tlingit and Haida, and our Wrangell Cooperative Association brought down Starlink capabilities to those residents. Would the hazard mitigation agencies help us in that respect?
So if I am not mistaken, I believe Tlingit and Haida might be going directly to FEMA looking for some assistance on reimbursements related to the Starlink deployments. As far as improving internet access over there and along as a long-term thing, I would guess that you might be able to consider that hazard mitigation. It's not really my bag or my lane, so I don't want to talk too much into it and get you off base, you know. But you know, if you can make an argument that having that kind of communication equipment or that kind of communication capability is vital to preventing future disaster damage to those residents and that infrastructure, then I think you'd have, you know, some kind of leg to stand on as far as asking for assistance with that stuff through hazard mitigation.
And as we kind of talked about, having access to FEMA buckets of hazard mitigation funds, that'll only enhance our our process as we go along into the second and third phase of recovery and preparation for the next thing. One thing I kind of missed earlier, and I wanted to talk about it, is if you are in close proximity to the slide, and with this rainfall, you do not feel safe, we're kind of using a good neighboring system. I know that Trident's offered some bunkhouses available. Please contact Tammy Meisner or Heidi Armstrong to get set up. Tammy Meisner's number is 907-518-1418. Again, 907-518-1418. Hopefully she's not mad at me for offering up her personal phone, but she's a pretty cool gal. So I think that's all the questions I have at this point in time. Anybody else have anything to offer, Sam?
Yeah, I thought I'd jump in on the question about a road around the island to provide secondary access. We are going to be working on a new Southeast plan, and so it would be good to have the community talk with our planning section to see if that could be added to it. Also, as far as dock improvements, we work with MARAD, a federal agency, on resiliency grants. So there is money out there that might be available for something like that. And we can talk with the community about that as well. So thanks.
And on the emergency access road, that's something that we really drove home with the delegation on our trip to DC. We put that in front of Sullivan and Murkowski. And we actually got quite a bit of traction on it. I know that it's a complex project because it involves multiple jurisdictions, U.S. Forest Service, DOT, borough land. The maintenance ongoing would probably require a really robust MOU, just because the dollar figure we'd be throwing out, that would be quite material. And so we're working on potentially getting a supplemental emergency appropriation. There's a lot of foreign aid going out the door to Israel and Ukraine right now. Oftentimes these disasters, if federally declared, get linked onto those supplemental emergency appropriations. So we could see funding available sooner than later, but it will require a good collaboration with DOT and United States Forest Service, which we met with both those parties in the last couple of weeks on it. So excited about that potential. Again, don't want to create any false hope that this is going to happen in a year's time, but it's certainly something to strive for over the next 3 years. There's another question we've got about animal care and support. So I think folks are worried that they can't have their pets accommodated in town because they've evacuated in town. So they've left them out there. Again, I would just kind of say, have a good neighboring system. If you do leave your animals out there, make sure that you don't leave before having your neighbor able to feed them or take care of them if necessary. Again, with the inclement weather, we're not positive on the time frames we'll be able to allow people to flow to and from the 11-mile marker. Like I said, we'll come out with updates as soon as possible. We'll kind of analyze first thing tomorrow morning what the effects of all this rainfall has done. So that would be my response on the animal care and support. Now, I think there are places in town that would probably be welcoming and accommodate pets. So again, reach out to Tammy Meisner. I think she'll be a good resource for you. Disaster drills was another question we got, and I think that's certainly something to include an appendix on in our emergency operations plan. We have not done a great job.
We may have lost the city feed.
I believe we did. Stand by a second and he'll be able to rejoin and provide closing comments. Thank you, everyone.
No, I'm not sure if we're still live, but I'll fill up this space with some comments. You know, I would really encourage people there in Wrangell to take a look around. We've have some printed material in the community. There's also stuff that is available on the Wrangell Landslide webpage. So you can get familiar with those warning signs, have some of those flyers in your home so you can review them often. There's the National Weather Service that you can sign up for push weather updates and get those on your phone or in your email box. Start to receive that information on a regular basis. Talk to your neighbors about how you're going to communicate about warning signs and talk to one another. And when the risk is higher, be aware, be alert, start looking for some of those conditions that could lead to landslides. Just filling up some time there, Mason.
No, I appreciate it. I'm sorry. We might need to seek funding for better internet here down at City Hall, so I keep getting kicked off. I think I just kind of want to wrap it up. I don't know where I got cut off in the process, but I want to thank everybody on this panel. You guys have been really a guiding force for all of us in this second stage of recovery that we're embarking on. We're confident, like Shannon had said, that we should have this road covered off in a couple of weeks, depending on inclement weather and other variables. But we're confident we're going to be taking care of that and addressing our constituents' needs on the south side of the slide. So if you have any concerns or questions that we didn't address today, please reach out to me or anybody at City Hall. You can ask to speak with the police department or the fire hall, and we'll make sure that we get those questions answered. And again, you can comment on the Facebook Live, and we'll be reviewing those too, and either releasing a statement or doing another one of these later down the line. But again, just really appreciate everybody that's joined us today. We're looking out for the public safety. That's our top of mind, and I know it's the assembly's top of mind moving forward, so that'll be a big goal. So thank you all, and I hope you guys have a wonderful weekend, and stay tuned for more updates.
Yeah, thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.